Joining me inside the barn, as it does each month, is Capital State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg. We'll be discussing several topics related to agriculture on the state and national level, and starting with that national side of the equation. Last week, some big news for agriculture. We'll start off on May 17th. President Donald Trump announced that he was ready to remove the Section 232 tariffs on Canada and Mexico, which would clear the way for Congress to take up ratification of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade deal. That's big news, and once the USMCA is ratified, that would be even bigger news for agriculture, Jerry.
Absolutely. It's great to be with you again, Brian, and you're exactly right. Our two largest trading partners are Canada and Mexico, and quite frankly, when we can remove the barriers and actually negotiate the agreement that benefits us, I think that is absolutely big news for agriculture.
And also, it was earlier in the day, I believe the USDA indicated that Japan has agreed to lift the 30-month age restriction on beef imports to the United States. That's going to be big for U.S. agriculture and the livestock industry, too.
No, absolutely. And the truth is, the United States is one of the safest and healthiest products produced in the world. And Japan knew that the age restrictions for foot and mouth, that doesn't happen in the United States because of the way we take care of our animals and our restrictions, our own health restrictions. So they realize that. They know they need our beef. It's the best in the world.
And according to the USDA, by the way, they estimate the expanded access for this new deal and the age restriction being dropped could increase U.S. beef and beef product exports to Japan by up to $200 million annually. Now that we did have some bad news last week, though, as the U.S.-China trade war still remains unresolved, President Trump decided to implement the $200 billion more in tariffs, and he's even threatened more, Jerry.
Yeah, it's one of those deals that I'm cautiously optimistic that China needs our stuff. One way or another, there's not another country in the world that can provide the amount of food that we provide in the United States for the rest of the world. But I'm giving it time to the president time to be able to negotiate this. It's not good news in the short term, but I think it'll be positive in the long term.
My guest once again is Colorado State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg. I wanted to move to some Colorado topics. You guys just wrapped up a whirlwind of a legislative session recently. Tell me how many bills went through this session, and there seemed like there was a lot more bad than there was good coming out of this one.
Yeah, interestingly enough, I think there was just under 600 bills, 590, something like that, bills introduced, which actually is about 100 less than the year before.
Wow.
But unfortunately, with 3 weeks left, we had 100 more to deal with than we did the year before. So everything was left until the last couple of 3 weeks. And you're exactly right. I would argue there were a number of bills, bad bills, that were left in the mix. The Democrats just couldn't seem to say no to any new idea that had to do with any spending. We were able to stop some bad bills, at least limit some bad bills, quite frankly, because of the inability for them to complete the calendar. We use the calendar in our favor to say, look, if you want anything to pass, here's what we're going to have to negotiate on. And so they negotiated some things. We were able to slow some things down, stop some things, but rest assured, those that were stopped this year will most likely be back next year, and I'm guessing they learned from their mistakes this year. The calendar will be managed much differently during the next year's session, so they don't end up in the bind that they ended up in this year.
And Governor Polis is traveling the state, signing numerous bills, and I know that you carried a bill late in the session to help fix the fertilizer tax, and I know it passed the committee, it passed both chambers. But the governor, as far as I know right now, has not signed that bill into law.
That's my understanding as well. I had a couple of bills in the last days of the session to expand the farm equipment sales and use tax exemptions, as well as the wholesale sales agriculture fertilizer tax exemption, which, interestingly enough, shouldn't have had to have been a bill, but because of the reinterpretation that the executive branch does, and in this case, the Department of Revenue, all of a sudden decided, you know, the last 20 years, the fertilizer has been tax exempt. We think that's wrong. So we're going to rewrite the rules and now collect tax on fertilizer. So I had to run a bill to do that. That was indeed passed. I have yet to be notified of any of my bills that have passed for a bill signing throughout the state. So, from my side of the aisle, I guess that doesn't happen for us Republicans unless, although interestingly enough, I was going to say unless there's a Democrat on the bill, but come the waning days, the president of the Senate and I were talking, and I actually put him on the bill with me. So I don't know. Maybe they'll have a bill signing in Pueblo on those two bills, but obviously I haven't been notified of a bill signing yet. He still has, 10 days, 2 weeks, something like that yet to. He has 30 days to the end from the end of the session, so that'd be June 2nd, I believe, to sign all these bills.
What happens if he doesn't sign them, Jerry?
If he doesn't sign them, they still become law without his signature. He would have to veto them for them to be go away. And I haven't seen anything with regard to any vetoes that he has or anything like that. I've had bills vetoed before by Hickenlooper. And they will give you a heads up ahead of time, but this governor, I don't know what Polis is going to do. Quite frankly, it's been one of those frustrating years. You look at some of the things that I wanted to work with Polis on, and the communication was next to nothing with the governor's office. From my perspective, he calls me up, which is one of two phone calls I've received from the governor, actually three phone calls that I received from governor since the election. So we don't talk often. One of them was, hey, we'd like you to be the sponsor since you're a supporter of full-day kindergarten, especially in how it helps in rural Colorado. We'd like you to be the Senate sponsor. And then when it comes right down to it, that was one of his main campaign issues. When it comes right down to it, the president of the Senate, the leadership in the Senate said, no, Sonnenberg's not carrying that. We're not going to let a Republican be the co-prime with a Democrat in the Senate. And then the governor didn't go to bat for it and push on that. And then another one was the sales tax. The governor talked about reducing the state income sales tax. And so I ran a bill to just do that. He told me he liked it. He says it one of the things that stimulates an economy. And then when it comes right down to it, the governor's office, the first floor, was not helpful at all in passing that bill, and it died in the first committee in the Senate. So interesting dynamics, and maybe we can chalk that up to a rookie governor for the first time, that first year, not being able to weigh in where he wanted to weigh in, I guess, or not understanding maybe how it worked. I'll choose to do that rather than just say that it was political games, at least for the first year.
Well, there's many of us in rural Colorado wanting to know if he even knows how to spell veto, if all the bills he's already signed that have really been controversial and detrimental to the economy of the state of Colorado. And I'm speaking in particular to 181. And there's already been some counties that have decided to put in a moratorium for oil and gas drilling in those local control districts that were in question before 181 was signed.
Yeah, and that'll just lead to lawsuits. What we've done is created a new environment for full-time employment for anybody with a law degree that deals in natural resources, and you might expect that. I mean, minerals, whether it be oil and gas or whatever it may be, are a constitutional property right. They're guaranteed in the Constitution, and they have value according to our Constitution. And when you take that away, when you take that value away, there will be a takings claim. And so there will be plenty of court trials from those cities that or jurisdictions that ban oil and gas where you've taken someone's property away. And I liken it to if I buy a piece of property, and that piece of property I want to build a house on, and then all of a sudden the county comes in and says, I'm sorry, you can't build a house there because that's going to block our view of that open space back there. I don't care if that's your property or not, and if you paid for that property, you have just taken the value of that property away because now you can't sell it to anybody else for a house deal or to build a house or a building on. You have taken someone's value away, and that's going to be the same as oil and gas.
Speaking of constitutional takeaways, the red flag bill, take your guns without due process. That's another one that's going to be challenged, I'm guessing, in court, too.
I think, yes, indeed, it'll be challenged in court. I am so worrisome about our law enforcement that actually have to carry out those orders, their safety. We've seen across the country a couple instances where someone had gone in to take someone's guns, a citizen that has never had an arrest record, but someone said that they were mentally unstable, and all of a sudden gunfire erupts and people die. And then that is not, from my perspective, helpful to anyone. Now, if you remember, I offered an amendment to say, if this is truly about mental health, if we're worried about how people react, then let's get them the help. Let's go in instead of take their guns. Let's talk to those people, get them the help they need, and then report to the judge if this person is mentally stable or unstable. But then we heard in the testimony and the debate that this wasn't about mental health. This truly was about taking guns away.
Yeah, and that's sparked some recall efforts across the state. One of them in particular, Rachel Galindo from House District 50. And that one seems like she's decided to resign. It seems to me like that could have worked in the benefit of the Democrats to keep that and retain that seat instead of going to an election this fall, Jerry. So she what, took one for the team?
Yeah, there were some other issues there as well that had surfaced with regard to sexual assault accusations against her that clouded the issue even more. And yes, she took one for the team to save the seat. And if you remember, back in the recalls in 2013, there were two that were recalled. And then a third one potentially being recalled, and if the third one would have been recalled, that would have changed the power who had the majority in the Colorado Senate. And so she was forced to take one to the team as well and resign so they could replace her with another Democrat. That'll be the same way in Greeley. And quite frankly, what they will do and the way this works on all the recalls, is that they look at the numbers, they'll do polling and see if there is a chance that they would actually lose the recall. And if there's a chance they will lose the recall, a good chance, then I would think that you would see most of them forced into some sort of resignation replaced by a vacancy committee so the seat does not change seats.
Also, the recall of national popular vote, that's another one of those big three, I call them, that they're going to be challenged on because they just gave away our right in the presidential elections. And I think there's a lot of people upset about that one.
Well, absolutely. And we were worrisome about the overreach of what the Democrats would do. We actually saw that this year. That was one of the overreaches. And what we are seeing is an attempt by Colorado to make sure that Democrats win every election and never lose control of either chamber or the governor's mansion again. National popular vote for president is one way. We have seen election laws change. We are seeing now a bill that passed kind of under the radar that says if you apply for Medicaid benefits, you must register you and your family to vote. So they're doing registration, voter registration, when you apply for benefits, if you're a family in need, I asked the question during committee. I said, so if you really want everybody to vote, and quite frankly, Colorado has the best voting record in the country and the best voter turnout in the country, if you really want everybody to vote, why then wouldn't you automatically register those that pay property tax or those that file income tax returns with the Department of Revenue? Instead, they're doing targeted groups that they think will help them, and that's where they're getting their voters and voter base, and they're using state tax dollars now to do that rather than their party to register voters.
And also the Department of Motor Vehicles, when you go in to get your license, automatic voter registration too. My guest once again is Capital State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg. I had another topic I wanted to spend a little bit of time on before I let you go. On May 1st, to commemorate Animal Welfare Day, Governor Jared Polis joined First Gentleman Marlon Rees and Lieutenant Governor Diane Primavera to announce the People for Animal Welfare, or PAW, Committee. I wanted to get your thoughts about that, because it seems to me like when I look through the list of who's on that committee, not one person from agriculture is represented.
You're exactly right. And I had sent out a statement regarding that as well. Quite frankly, it disturbs me that we have the first husband, I can't remember what his title is, but the husband of Governor Polis, as an animal activist with no regard or understanding of agriculture and how we take care of our animals here on the farms and ranches, and then to put a committee together to deal with animal welfare and not include agriculture, quite frankly, is a slap in the face to every animal owner in the state of Colorado.
And they say they formed this committee to foster a healthy debate and ensure the widest possible range of Coloradans have a voice on the PAW committee. Now, here's the thing, too, Jerry. In the press release, not once does it mention companion animal or cats and dogs. It is a broad statement of animals, which a lot of us in agriculture and livestock industry are concerned. And it just seems to me like it is really strange that a committee was formed by a first gentleman and not by the governor, even though he said he signed off on it. I don't know if that's ever happened before.
You know, and that is a challenge. If you want to have a committee to start a discussion, why would you not include agriculture? Of all people, why would you not include those in agriculture? I mean, we have, in my Senate district, I have 10 times as many cattle as I have people. Why would you not include someone in the livestock industry? Someone in the pork industry? We have large pork operations that feed the world, and yet that are doing things that take care of animals, that are environmentally friendly, and why would you not include them to actually get their expertise, to understand some of the new things we're doing to make sure that we have healthy animals? It bothers me not only when you have committees like this put together, but you have organizations like and businesses like Walmart and McDonald's now that think they know how to take care of animals better than the farmers and ranchers. And like McDonald's, with their new policy that they will no longer take animals vaccinated with antibiotics into their meat system. They'd rather see those animals die from being sick than actually treated with antibiotics to make them healthy again. Imagine if we did that with our children.
And it's a head scratcher, no doubt. And I wanted to update you on something that I had sent you a message on. The barn has been reinstated to do radio interviews with the Cobb Department of Agriculture. There was a moratorium there for just a bit, and pretty concerning on my end when they announced that there were no more interviews available, but we did get reinstated. And looking forward to starting those Department of Ag interviews once again.
Well, let me just say on that, the Kate Greenberg, Commissioner of Agriculture, I was very disappointed when the moratorium was put in place as they were trying to evidently restructure and figure out what they needed to do. I'm glad that she is willing to come back out and have those conversations and talk with folks, talk with the media, be open to some of the issues that's going on. I'm dealing with the Department of Ag on a couple of issues, quite frankly. I got an email response because they have changed the way for our aerial applicators. When we, during our busy season, we have aerial applicators that come in from other states that fly under a commercial license, the contract with a commercial applicator. And all of a sudden now, the new interpretation, again, these guys in the executive branch in each of these departments decide to make new interpretations of the law. I got an email back that said, well, we've been interpreting the law incorrectly. Now they have to come in and get their own Colorado private or commercial applicators license, which is going to keep people from actually coming in here and getting the work done. I'm fighting that. I'm fighting a number of different things with the Department of Ag that's actually, interestingly enough, tend to end up, most of the problems tend to end up in their pesticide division there. And so we're going to try and work through that. Hopefully that the department will continue to listen to agriculture and work with agriculture rather than against them.
Well, I'd love to visit with you more about those topics you just discussed, because I've been hearing some rumblings about the private and commercial pesticide situation and getting permits and licenses approved. Now, I know that we've covered quite a few topics here, Senator Sonneberg. Anything else you want to mention in your final thoughts before I let you go?
Oh, absolutely. Just let me say that it's nice to be back on the farm. It's a dreary, cold week this week for some, but we call that million-dollar rains out here in rural Colorado. As long as that doesn't get down there below freezing and hurt our wheat a little bit, we're enjoying the rain, and I'll put up with the rain and the dreary weather here for a few days to get us a little moisture. It's nice to be back on the farm and the ranch as things green up and do what I do best, quite honestly, and that's take care of the land and the livestock and provide habitat for wildlife. So it's good to be back home. I'll still be busy with legislative activities and committees that I serve on, and we can talk about those some next month, maybe.
You bet. Sounds great. My appreciation to Colorado State Senator Jerry Sonneberg for joining me here inside the barn and on the Colorado Ag News Network and Farmcast Radio. Much appreciated, as always, Senator.
Thank you, Brian. It's always good to talk with you.
Colorado State Senator Jerry Sonneberg represents the counties of Cheyenne, Elbert, Lincoln, Logan, Kit Carson, Morgan, Phillips, Sedgwick, Yuma, Washington, and Weld. You can follow Colorado State Senator Jerry Sonneberg on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, or by visiting his website at electsonneberg.com.